I think you've kind of heard enough about who we are. We're, let's see, we've married 16 and a half years, and there are three boys that some days reluctantly we claim, some days not so reluctantly, that are running around, Sean, Kat, and Kevin. And we're really pleased to be here at Holden. A few of you may have heard this story before, but it's kind of a unique way that we got here. 20 years ago this summer, I think it was about this time of year, I'm not really sure, I managed to be up here, a fresh graduate of Gonzaga University in Spokane, which is where we live now again. I happened to be working for Our Savior Lutheran Church in Spokane that summer. The pastor was a former prof of mine, and the youth group was coming up to Holden Village, and it sounded like a fun place to come. So I came for a few days, fell in love, and made a mental note to myself, no matter what happens, someday I'm going to get back here. So with kind of a talking myself into having the guts to do so, I wrote and said, if you ever need faculty, here's who we are and what we've done, and we'd be glad to come sometime. And they said, come ahead. So that's how we got here. So I'm glad I took the risk to do that. Anyway, Mitch and I have done some writing and speaking in the area of marriage and family life, and to us it's a really important topic. And I'll give you a bit of a sense late in the hour of the kinds of things that we'll be talking about the other days this week. But we'll have some process, actually we'll start you off with that in just a minute today, but we're going to load today more with content in terms of us presenting, kind of lay groundwork for some of the discussion we'll have the other days. But there'll be more interchange and discussion on the other days of the week with one another. Okay, so to start things off, I'd like to put you to work and do a bit of word association. And when you hear the word family, and if those of you who know word association know you should do this very fast, don't think about it very long, what are words that come to mind? Let's see what we can generate.
Children.
Group.
Together.
Parents.
Love.
Home.
Caring. Now these are all very nice words, but let's get a little more.
Chaos.
What else?
Arguing.
Chaos.
Fighting.
Now we're getting there.
Yeah, distraction.
My favorite word is messy. Families are messy, I think.
Spending.
Cheating.
How about a few dots after spending? It's always something more that I really need, not just want, need, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Anything else real quick before we end this list?
Clothes.
You didn't put down stress.
Stress, okay, and
clothes.
Clothes.
Maybe
okay.
That's like spending.
Yes.
Nagging.
There we go.
Spoiled.
Power struggle.
Are we doing better?
We can go on and on here.
Candy bar, yes.
Struggle, okay. Now we're getting a little more real.
Responsibilities.
Time.
Gosh.
Chores.
How about a good one? Sharing.
Yeah, we that's that. Related to sharing. Put it over here.
Did anybody say anything about food?
No.
That's a biggie.
That's a biggie.
Origin.
Okay, we've got a good list here.
Time?
Lots of time.
Tradition?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Tradition's a good one.
In the interest of time, we'll move on to a contrasting list for a minute. I forget if this is the way I usually do it, or usually is this the order I usually do it. Okay, a new word. What do you think of when you think of church? First thing that comes into your head?
Worship.
Worship? Quick. Boring. What else?
Hiking. Singing.
Yeah.
Singing.
Okay. Keep going. funny.
Forming children.
There we go.
Now, remember, we're just separating ourselves from this for a sec. Forming children. There was one that I didn't put down here. What was it?
Building.
Okay, that somebody already said.
Learning.
God. I think there was another one.
God.
God.
Totally.
Children. Volunteer.
Volunteer.
Commitment.
Somebody said money.
Belonging.
Structure.
Okay. I'm sure by now you can't read these words. I put them up here. I don't have the practice teacher's handwriting on it for it. Okay, again, anything else that relates to church that comes to mind first off?
Youth group.
Youth group, okay.
Pastor.
I find that this process of doing word association is helpful so that we're not talking about vague, idealized concepts, but what really does that connect with for me?
I think of family. I think of church, not my family, but the church family.
Church as a family?
Conflict.
Friends.
Okay.
Jesus.
Okay.
Support.
Caring. It's interesting to hear the kinds of words you're generating here. I don't think this will be a major issue at any point, though it may make a little difference as far as some emphasis. But Mitch and I come out of the Catholic tradition, and we've done this with a lot of Catholic groups. And the words are slightly, not significantly different, but somewhat different. With Catholic groups, you wouldn't usually come up with fellowship, for example, and some of the others might be different.
Mission.
Okay. Ministry. Somebody else?
Love.
Okay. Now, how much do you see in common in those two lists?
There's a lot of sameness.
There is a lot of sameness? Show me where the...
Well, we don't have the word commitment and family, but I think that word should be over there.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Well, struggle and conflict.
Struggle and conflict, but those, okay, those were fairly late. And we've got caring in both places.
Ending in money.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we're talking about financial dimensions to both. And we did have family as a leader here.
Together in fellowship.
Yeah. Okay.
Children.
Okay.
Both, yes.
Children. Okay, and that's up here. But by and large, the world that we may connect with the notion of family and the world we may connect with the notion of church, would you say that for many of them, they're kind of a different mindset, a different gear that we're in those two realms, those two worlds?
Okay. Depends on what kind of a family it is, and whether it's a Christian family or whether it's a family that doesn't have any part of the church at all.
Okay. But even if we talk about Christian families, my experience, and again, I can't answer this for you in terms of your experience, but my experience is, as much as I've talked about these ideas and I'm really convinced of them, is that there is a sense in which, for the most part, my faith experience has a hard time translating itself into the fixing the meals and cleaning up the messes and changing the diapers and the taking out the garbage. That's my experience. Is that your experience?
Yeah, I can't quite hear you. Can you
okay.
Speak a little more loudly?
Sorry. Yeah, thanks for saying that. Okay, again, I can't say if that's your experience, but it's... As we've talked with many groups of people, that's often been the experience that they relate. And what we want to explore with you today is the connectedness which
I think we have a sense of it being there, but we need to be reminded, I need to be reminded at least, of how much the one is part of the other, how wholly the leftovers are, and the taking out the garbage, and the cleaning up the mess the pet has just made, and so on. It doesn't look very holy a lot of the time, okay? A couple of things that I'd like to say before we go any further. We've talked about family here as though it's one reality. And though it didn't come up a lot in our brainstorming here, we have a lot of rosy kinds of connections with the notion of family that may have overtones of a Norman Rockwell painting of people sitting around the Thanksgiving table, or Leave It to Beaver and Ozzie and Harriet and all those sorts of things. What we need to remind ourselves, which we're all too, I think, aware of in one sense, is that really we need to talk about families, okay? We need to talk about a variety which has really pretty much always been there sociologically when we take a look. The 40s to the 60s, especially the 40s and 50s, were a kind of an anomaly sociologically, and the family, in terms of mom, dad, and so many children being all intact, and mom being home full time, and so on, some of the kinds of things that we may think about when we think about family, is pretty historically unusual, whereas we tend to have this association with the word family that has us see it as this is the way it should be. When we look again historically, we see that there were a lot of single parent, what we call single parent families, and blended families, therefore, in the 19th century and early 20th, a lot of women died in childbirth. There were a lot of deaths of parents due to influenza and various kinds of other problems. Probably most of you, if you look back a couple, three generations, know of someone who was raised by aunt or uncle, or where there was a remarriage or whatever. And so it was darn tough to be a single, I mean, it's not easy now, and we'll talk about that later in the week, but it was tougher, I think, to be a single parent in those times. So, single parent families, couples whose children are grown and gone, couples who have not begun a family or have made a choice not to have children, single-parent families, what are some other kinds of families that come to mind as you think about family?
Well, I had someone ask me last week, I was dancing with one of the teaching staff members at dance, and he said, well, have you ever thought about family? And I said, well, yeah, I have a family. And he said, oh, do you, like, he thought I must be then a single parent with a couple of kids somewhere else or with my ex-husband. I said, well, yeah, I've got three sisters, one brother, a mom, a dad, three grandparents, you know, and then he's real sheepish. But I think of those people as my family.
Family of origin, uh-huh. And that's a dynamic for all of us. Another dynamic that I would suggest is those folks who are career singles or for the time being single, I think end up not only with a family of origin, Barb, but also with a network of folks that function for them family-like. I've taught about marriage and family a lot at Gonzaga to the undergraduates who are really in their lives at a point where they feel most apart from any notion of family. They're trying desperately to really, you know, pull away from their own family of origin, and they're really not that serious, most of them, about beginning marriage and family of their own. But there are people who those folks will go to with their immediate joys and sorrows and will come knocking on their door, will you please type my paper, I gotta have it in at 8 o'clock in the morning, or whatever it is. And I think there's a family-ness that happens around that, by which I would mean the, running out of room here, the basic web of relationships that makes us who we are. Um, That's a pretty broad definition. There are people whose experience has been so wounded with their family of origin that would be a hard time fitting their families of origin into that notion, and that's something we might want to talk about more. I have this on for a reason, in case you're wondering. It's a not super current, but the last family portrait we had taken. And I wanted to wear it because I think there's a sense in which all of us, in one way or another, wear one of these around invisibly. That is, if you start talking to me, chances are within 5 to 10 minutes I brought up one of the kids, if not more, and or Mitch, because they are so much a part of my life. I can't talk about and share and be me without them coming up in the conversation, because, and I think that's, you know, I mean, I think that can be unhealthy, but I don't experience it to be unhealthy in me. There's a sense in which our lives are so intertwined with one another, and yet we tend to underemphasize that, I think, in our individualistic society, where we say, no, it's just me, I gotta be me, I gotta, you know, I've got to use all my potential and so on. And we have our own version of that in our church life, where we talk about it's me and God. Yes, there's a sense in which it is ultimately me and God, but there is a very real sense in which those relationships that make me who I am, any one of which, if it were different, I would be different. That's an essential part of my faith. And I think that goes both ways. That means, too, that if in the people whose lives intersect with me, if I weren't part of their lives, they would in turn be different. What do you think? Does that make sense in your experience? I think we tend to underemphasize that because of our cultural notions about individualism. And we tend to emphasize the sense of, no, it's just me, I've got to get on with my life. And if that affects these relationships, well, it does, but that's the way life is. And I think there's a way in which we need to take a look again at that relationality of faith. What is that basic web of relationships that makes me who I am, where I live my hope, my joy, my sorrow, my need for forgiveness? Those are the people I bump up against, and I don't have this great and shining sense of myself. I show all my rough edges and rub it against theirs. That's where the reconciliation, the forgiveness is needed. That's where my sense of being loved, no matter how crummy I am today, how grumpy, how grouchy, how awful I am, those are the people who put up with me anyway, you know? What is the Robert Frost poem, Home is Where, when you go there, they have to take you in? Some days we'd rather not, but we end up having to do that. That's where the real me is, and that's where the me that has the potential for faith lives as well. I think those are the main things I kind of wanted to say as introductory. Any comments or questions? I saw a hand earlier.
I was just curious, when you say family, if you automatically mean children, or do you consider a couple of family as well?
Yeah, that's what I meant about families. I think that the couple, when a couple has children, then that is part of that family relationship. But then when the children are grown and gone, there's a sense in which, yes, we are family, but there's a sense in which there's a family relationship that consists of that couple as well.
But when there are no children?
When there are no children, I think that's a family, yeah, definitely. And I think it has its own dynamics and its own needs. So I think in the sense that I mean it, we all are a part of probably at least a couple of families. Pretty broad definition, though. It's a tough one, you know, that in the Carter years, as you may remember, the White House Conference on the Family was undertaken as far as the initial stages of it. And they got these folks together who worked with families in all kinds of different ways. And the sparks started to fly. Nobody could figure out, okay, what do we mean by family? Which is kind of the bottom line before we can build from there. So it rapidly became the White House Conference on Families because there was no real sense of a real consensus on that question. And yet that's a pretty important, pretty basic part of our lives. Okay, Mitch is going to explore with us then what has happened in our Christian tradition that has brought about
And I think we could really say that, or at least emphasize the tension between these two realms of experience. Why don't we see our religious life as more intimately connected with our family experience? Okay, I'll do some raising.
Essentially, what we're getting at, if I could put this in one term now, is that from the perspectives of the Christian tradition, a family, whatever that may be, married couple with no children, single-parent family, blended family, single person in the context of his or her extended family, and so on and so forth, any of those, that family, whatever it may be, is an ecclesial reality, is a form of faith community, is a form of church, is the bottom line as far as faith communities are concerned. We tend to think of the local congregation or parish or whatever it might be as the church's bottom line. And what we're suggesting is that that ain't so. Okay? That these local, these households of faith constitute the Christian community's bottom line. Okay. Where do I get that idea? Is it a new idea? By no means is it a new idea. It's one of those, quote, new ideas that we're beginning to rediscover. Okay, when we begin to look at church history a little bit and realize it's been there all along and we just forgot about it, and it has some terribly, terribly important implications for our lives here and now today. Okay? So, a little storytelling, if you will, about one of the stories of the Christian community down through the centuries. Okay. One of the ways of kind of putting that in brief terms, or just coming up with a shorthand way of saying all that I just said, is to refer to a family as domestic church. Okay? This is the term that has kind of come out in terms of the Catholic tradition, shorthand way of doing that. Another one is to refer to the family as the foundational church, or the foundational faith community, okay? Because everything builds on the quality of faith commitment within the context of those family relationships. All right, where does it come from? If we go all the way back, what were the first Christians? After the death and resurrection of Jesus, what did the first Christians do? Did they start a Christian congregation? Did they open up the local Christian church? No. What did they do? What does the Acts of the Apostles tell us that the first Christians did?
They traveled.
Were doing. No, even before that.
Didn't they worship in their homes?
No. No.
They tried to hide.
Spent a lot of time regularly in the synagogue. Okay? They could be seen daily in the synagogue praying together. Okay? They initially didn't have a sense of themselves as a new religious tradition, if you will. Okay, that didn't really happen until they got kicked out, you know? Got kicked out of the synagogue. So basically, our roots as Christians are Jewish. Okay, it begins to show you how totally unacceptable anti-Semitism is, just for starters, you know? Okay, and yet how involved Christians have been down through the centuries pogroms and other forms of anti-Semitism. Okay, our Jewish roots show us that even today, I even went and talked to a rabbi about this. Okay, even today in modern Jewish understanding, the family is the basic cell of community life in the Jewish tradition. And that's the way it has always been, really, since the destruction of the temple in 70 AD, at least, and the emergence of the form of Judaism that, you know, came into existence after that. The family is the basic faith community. How many of you have ever seen either the movie or a stage production of Fiddler on the Roof? Okay? Remember that beautiful scene around the table on the Sabbath when Tevye and Golda gather the children around the table and they light the candles and they sing, "May the Lord bless and defend you," this kind of thing, okay? Notice, to celebrate the Sabbath, they did not all get into Tevye's milk cart and drive down to the synagogue. to celebrate the Sabbath, they gathered around the family table, and Golda lights the candles, and they celebrate Sabbath around the family table. Okay? Because the family is the basic faith community, as far as the Jewish tradition is concerned. All right. So it goes that far back, at least. All right? The early Christians, I've already mentioned that. Okay? Gathered in one another's homes. It was just natural. The early Christians were Jewish. The natural gravitational pull for them would be towards the home. Right? They did not go out and build the local Christian church, a building. Okay? They gathered in one another's homes. And in the letters of Paul, you know, and in the Acts of the Apostles, this is just kind of mentioned in passing. We take it for granted. This is where we gather. Okay? It wasn't that long before they began to, you know, build larger community centers and so forth. But initially, this is where the direction takes us. Okay, there's a lot of history that I'm skipping over here because we don't have time to go into a lot of detail. But the most significant theological, in terms of an explicit theological statement, the first thing that we were able to find is in some commentaries on Genesis and the letter to the Ephesians, one of the early church fathers who ended up being in kind of the Eastern Church after the division took place between the Eastern and Western churches was a guy by the name of John Chrysostom. John Chrysostom, in his commentaries, refers to the family with the Greek New Testament term for church, which is?
Ecclesia.
Sure. He says, the family is ecclesia. The family is ecclesia. You say the local Christian community is ecclesia. The family is ecclesia, is church. He doesn't say it's sort of like the church, or it's kind of by way of analogy, it is church. He said it is church. Occasionally, he used the diminutive form ecclesiola, which means little church. But most of the time, he simply said the family is church. Okay, very significant theologically in terms of patrology, the writings of the early fathers of the church. All right. I get one of the big differences between Protestants, at least Lutherans and Catholics, is that Lutherans say Augustine and Catholics say Augustine. See, this is one of the more significant ecumenical issues. I don't know if it's come up in terms of ecumenical dialogues or not. But anyway, for the sake of ecumenical good feeling, Augustine...
What's his name?
Said, he even compared the father and the family, and today we'd, you know, be a little bit more balanced about this in terms of both parents, I think, but he said the father of the family is the bishop. You know? I kind of like that idea. Okay? The father of the family is the bishop, and the family table is the altar. You know, of the home, in the home. Luther was heavily influenced by Augustine. I wonder how he said it. How do you say it in German? Anyway, now, as we begin to move along here in terms of church history, we find ourselves at that point at which the Reformation took place. I'm obviously skipping a lot more here. F4. Okay. I not long ago wrote a little book on church history, and one of the things that became very clear to me in terms of doing the research for that book was the extent to which the Reformation was at least as much caused by Catholicism as it was by the Reformers. I mean, it was almost like they could have met sometime and shook hands and said, okay, let's do it, you know, because there was simply no sense of, there's no room anymore as far as from a historical perspective for either side blaming the other for the Reformation taking place. But at any rate, one of the issues I have been told, as far as Luther is concerned, although it may not have been on the top of his list, was one relating to family. One of the gripes he had about the Catholic Church at that point was the extent to which family life was not valued the way it ought to be, you know, which is certainly a legitimate criticism. Okay, so what do the Catholics do in regard to the Reformation? Institutionally, the response was known as the Council of Trent. And this took place in, anybody know the dates for the, when was the Reformation going on? 1563. Now, interesting thing is, actually, it didn't take that long. They had to adjourn a couple of times for a plague and a couple of wars. You know how it is. Okay, so anyway, that's how long before they finished the whole thing. Okay. And in the wake of the Council of Trent, we get what is often referred to as the Counter-Reformation. In other words, the Reformation said, we got to do this, and the Counter-Reformation said, oh, no, you aren't either. And, you know, the Catholic Church said, raise the drawbridges, batten down the hatches, and, you know, we got to save ourselves from the heretics. So what began to happen here is maybe not as much of interest to you as it is to Catholics, but I want to tell you a little bit about it because some of it's kind of funny. Basically, what began to happen from as far as the Catholic tradition is concerned here is we began to move in a very almost anti-family kind of direction. And the Reformation traditions began to do the same thing for their own reasons. Okay? And my understanding of the Catholic kind of tradition, what developed there, is better than my understanding of what happened in the Reformation tradition. So maybe some of you can be helpful in that regard. I have a good friend that I grew up with, as a matter of fact, who is a Lutheran pastor, and we've talked at some length about this, and he said that really, the sense when he was growing up, he didn't have a feeling that there was a lot of support for family life in terms of his local Lutheran congregation. Everything happened down at the church. Family. Is that right or not? Does that jive with your experience a lot, or? Mm-hmm. Yes, no?
Do you want to just say that again? Are you saying currently?
No, in terms of historically.
Historically.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you know anything about that at all, Barb?
Me?
No. Oh, I think it's just a personal, I don't know, I mean, I think a lot of us grew up with a sense of family at church too,
yeah.
As to whether they were supportive of family. Right.
Yeah.
It just varies.
Yeah. Okay. At any rate, we find ourselves today in a situation where we're beginning to rediscover this idea that the family itself is an authentic form of ecclesia or Christian community or church. And so what are the implications of that? Yes?
Just a moment. I think a tradition very common in Protestant churches is that people join a church when they have children. And with the idea that the church will preserve the family.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I don't know
yeah.
if that follows in the Catholic tradition.
Yeah. And is that in fact what happens?
Oh, yeah, the membership.
Uh-huh.
Especially in new neighborhoods.
Yeah, okay. I think that probably the Reformation traditions hung on to that a lot better than Catholicism did.
Though Greeley would say that that's true in terms of the Catholics a lot, that people will leave the Catholic Church and come back at
right,
birth,
today.
First child. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that happens.
Yeah. Sure.
The teenagers leave and then after the other kids get old enough to understand.
I think in my growing up, so much of it was centered around the pastor that you really had to go to church to do churchy kind of things.
Yeah.
And at home, we just felt inadequate, you know, like, for me to do this.
Yeah. See, that's a very common thing, I think. Parents today tend to feel inadequate. You know, we hear a lot, as Catholics, we hear a lot this idea of parents are the primary religious educators of their children. So what does the average parent feel? Inadequate. You know? And we're, so a lot of what we're going to be talking about this week is going to be getting into how really there is no need to feel inadequate. Because it's going on there all the time, whether we know it or not. And all we have to be concerned about with is recognizing that the basic life choices that we make are what are going to have the greatest impact on not only our children, but on other adults within the family network as well. Okay, so, but I'm skipping over to new material that we're going to get into later in the week if I talk any more about that. Okay, let's see. Where am I? So what we end up with is this idea of the family as foundational church. So we've come full circle, in essence, here. Okay? The family as foundational church. What this means is that the Christian community as a whole, or a local congregation, if you will, is only as strong as the links that make it up. Okay? If we use the chain metaphor. The local congregation is only, its faith is only as strong as the faith in those little households that constitute the congregation. Okay, we think of this as a local congregation, let's say. Okay, and here are the various households that make it up, you know, and they look different, and they're all doing different things, and they're, you know, all right. But they are only as strong, this circle here is only as strong as the little, this is not a real good drawing, is it? But the metaphor. The point is that we, the body, let's use St. Paul's metaphor of the body, okay? If the body of that is the congregation is going to be healthy, then all the basic cells that make up that body have to be healthy and strong, okay? You know, if the toe gets sick, you know, one of the households that constitutes that congregation is weakened for some reason or other, then the whole congregation is suffering. The whole body will suffer as a result of that. So, from a sociological perspective, what I'm talking about is what is sometimes referred to as the principle of subsidiarity. Anybody ever heard that before? Okay, the principle of subsidiarity says that nothing should be done at a higher level in an organization that can be done at a lower level. If it can be done on the level of the family, then it should not be going on the level of the local, you know, church, or it should not be going on down in the bishop's office or somewhere like that. Okay, those upper levels in the organization ought to be helping it to happen in the family where it should be happening. Okay, so there should be things going on like helping parents to be better parents, helping married people to be married to one another better. Okay, and the result is going to be a stronger local congregation. Okay, am I making any sense? Is this, are you following me here? All right. And a lot of efforts tend to be in the other direction. Well, we got all kinds of awful things happening to family life out there. What are we going to do? Well, let's set up a program up here somewhere, you know, to take care of the problem. And that's just not the way to go about it, according to this principle of subsidiarity, which insists that we need to do as much as we can on the lower levels, and at the more basic levels, where it's needed in the first place. All right. Okay, any questions about anything I've said? I went through a lot really fast here. I understand that. And I skipped over a lot of history. But the essential point I wanted to make is that I am not suggesting a new idea when I say that the family itself, in its various forms, is the bottom line as far as church is concerned. And once we accept that idea that the family is the most basic form of faith community, then there are all kinds of other implications that we're going to be getting into as we move along through the week here. Okay, any questions about that? Anybody want to throw any rocks or is
start any arguments or?
Yeah.
What's one of the issues that I have is being married to a person who is not involved in church at all, and having a teenage daughter who's not real excited about any of this either, and so then your family starts deteriorating in a lot of different places.
Yeah.
End up having the family as your church, and you know,
yeah,
a lot of separateness happening.
Yeah, yeah. And I hope we can get into that again as we move along through the week. There aren't any easy answers to that stuff. Another one is the question of ecumenical marriages. You know, situations where one person is Catholic and the other one is Lutheran, or one is Episcopalian and the other one's Methodist or something. And what do local congregations tend to do about those? Well, we ignore them, of course. Maybe they'll go away. You know, in the United States right now, 40% of all marriages that happen involving Catholics are Catholics marrying people in other denominations. For us now, that those are just the statistics. And I suspect they're quite similar for you. For those of you. Are there any other Catholics in this group? I ran into, okay, one. I noticed there were a couple out there the other night. Anyway.
Just another real quick question. Okay, given that this is so, then what is church? What is the church that we go to, for example, on Sundays?
Okay.
And so on.
One of the things we're not going to get into, so maybe I should talk about it a little bit now, is that I think that there is a, if we say this is the family, this is the local congregation or parish or whatever you want to call it, there's an interdependent relationship there. Okay, the local church has got to be supporting and nourishing families, those basic faith communities, if it is going to be what it is supposed to be. But on the other hand, the families are supposed to be responding by supporting the local congregation and enabling it to be what it is supposed to be. So that there, but if that interdependence isn't there, then things are going to go out of whack. You know, if it's all a one-way thing, which it tends to be, if we had to choose one over the other as to what tends to be predominant, often it's more the leadership in the local congregation saying, give to us, you know, come on down here and do stuff, you know, and give money and give time and give resources and all this. And what the family, faith community of the family gets in return is, well, we come to church on Sunday and we get some spiritual nourishment, you know, or something here, religious nourishment, and then we go home. And then, you know, often that's not enough. There's certainly a lot of potential for a lot more to be happening. Yes, you're looking puzzled. You have a question?
Well, I think what I've seen happen, is the church is taking away the responsibility of educating the children. We have the Sunday school, we have confirmation. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But then when the church offers adult Bible study, how many adults do you see go?
Yeah.
Who needs that? But then yet you feel inadequate as a parent because you don't have that knowledge, and yet you're not willing to go and get it.
Okay.
So I think there's a real problem.
Sure, but as a parent, I intuitively sense that if there is an adult Bible study held down there for me to go to, I have to leave my family in order to go do it. You know, I think all churches tend to do this. We tend to break up the family often and say, here's all these activities for adults over here, and here's this stuff for kids over here, and here's this stuff over here for singles. And, you know, we divide them up into little groups instead of nourishing that network of human intimacy that's supposed to. You know, there's a lot of theological stuff that goes on here that I'm not getting into. You know, things like the primary place that I encounter God is in my most important human intimacy relationships. The place that I most commonly experience God's presence is in my marriage and in my role as a parent. Okay? So if I'm being told, well, to nourish your faith, what you need to do is come down here to this Bible study, somehow it, on an unconscious level maybe, it clashes with my understanding of what's really the most basically important religious experience in my life. Yes.
So what you're saying, if I'm following this, okay, what you're saying is that the religious training, the reading of the Bible, having devotions and all of that, needs to start in the family.
Yeah.
Is that what you're saying?
Well, it, I don't know what's there. It needs to relate to that.
That we need to be doing this.
Yeah.
Families.
Yeah.
Okay? And that the church is there to nourish them.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but having separate classes, you feel, is what you're saying does not nourish that family.
I don't want to be absolute about that.
Okay.
That doesn't mean there's
all
no
right,
place for
right.
adult,
okay.
you know, educational activities of one kind
and
or another.
And for children, like Sunday school.
Sure. Yeah.
Okay.
But.
And schools, day schools.
Sure. But.
Yeah.
Well, I would say those things are good in a situation where parents already understand that they are secondary. That I cannot simply abdicate all responsibility for my child's religious formation to a program somewhere, in a school or in a local church.
So that's the basic line, is what you're saying right there. Mm-hmm. Is that the family
yeah.
needs to take the responsibility where the church
exactly.
is.
Exactly. Well, plus I think the local church leadership needs to see itself, in answer to your question about what is the church, as a family of families,
mm-hmm.
and that that there's a lot in common in terms of the various kinds of families. We need to nurture that, and that's what we're going to talk about next, I think. And we never know when it's the two of us who's our play by ear. And also that we need to celebrate that diversity, the variety of kinds of families that make up our local church family. And so when we program things, one of the things that we often suggest is a family impact statement. What about the scheduling that we have in our local congregation? What does that do? Is there a night of the week when a very active and fervent family in this congregation can stay home together and be with each other? Or are we all running off every night of the week, and so if we're really active here, we hardly see each other, you know? I mean, that's a real question to ask. Are we really appreciating? There was something that happened early this week where but are we acknowledging, you know, that this person is, yes, a member of our congregation, but also especially a member of this family? And do we as families do things like, you know, be part of an offertory procession if that's part of your liturgy and so on? Yes. Question.
My concern is the site of this. I mean, does it happen in the home, or is it the characteristic of the activities at the church, maybe?
See, I think it needs to be both, you know? There's a lot more room for the local leadership of the local congregation to be nourishing the quality of life in the home and building, helping faith to grow there. Okay? At the same time, youth activities are a good example, youth ministry, okay? I get a little concerned sometimes that youth ministry ends up putting a stamp of approval on what is often called the youth subculture, which says to teenagers, your relationships with your parents and your siblings are irrelevant. You know, are meaningless, they have nothing to give to you, you have nothing to give to them. All that matters is your peer relationships. You know? And often, there's a lot of room, I think youth ministry ought to be helping parents and teens to communicate better with one another, ought to be helping teens and their younger siblings to communicate better with one another. You know, help teenagers to maintain that anchor in their family that they really do feel a need for, I think. And often, my experience with youth ministry often is that they don't move in those kinds of directions. Instead, it becomes a kind of a services for fun and educational thing, and they go off by themselves, and then they come back again, and that's it. You know.
But how can we do that without a program somewhere? I mean, you can't just have that person come to your home and help.
Oh, no, by no means.
You have to have
sure.
a program to teach parents to relate to their kids.
Well, parents and teens together.
Together, right.
Yeah, sure. No, I'm not saying everything, I don't want to have a new isolationism here. You know, we have enough of that as a culture where we are supposed to be totally self-sufficient, independent little households out there. And if you have to borrow somebody's lawnmower, shame on you, you know, because you're self-sufficient. You're not self-sufficient if you do that. No, I'm not suggesting that either. Okay, do you want to finish up a little bit?
I'd like to look at the implications to the kinds of things we've said. I think I'll switch to this one. At least some of the initial implications about families. I've got my hands. I need your sheet, though. These are things we'll talk about a bit more this week, and also, little plug here, we go into more detail in our book, Christian Families in the Real World, which is in the bookstore. And the reason we call it in the real world relates to even our first brainstorming process. A lot of the stuff, not everything, but a lot of the stuff that we'd seen on Christian Family Life felt to us to be so idealistic and so, you know, we're kind of all floating around with halos that we felt we wanted to talk about the real world and the daily stuff that happens. Also, I hope there are enough copies of this. This is a kind of a distillation of some things that we're talking about today and will be through the week, 7 Ways to Enrich Faith Life in Your Home, that you're welcome to take a copy of this along. It's a Catholic update, but there's really almost nothing in it, I don't think, that's distinctively Catholic. What are the implications for seeing the family as the basic unit of the church? One of the things that, in this historical process, that was rediscovered in the Catholic tradition, and I think there's a parallel process that's been happening in a lot of other Christian denominations. Vatican II in the 60s talked again about, because we talked about it as an ancient idea, the family as the domestic church. But little note was taken of that until the last 10, 15 years. And there's more awareness, I think, happening in other denominations that, you know, as we were talking about in the local church, we've too often taken the family's stability and the family's health as a given sociologically, and then said, well, then we can have a men's group, and we can have a women's group, and we can have the kids over here and the youth here, and so on. What we're seeing sociologically is we can't assume the health of this foundational church. This church, if it's the domestic church, the foundational church, if this is the foundation, we've really got to do some shoring up of this foundation. We've got to really start nourishing our roots if we want to have healthy local congregations. I think that's a lot of what's happened in various denominations, to say, we've got to look again at this connection, not assume things that aren't necessarily going along automatically and healthily. So if we talk about the family is the basic unit of the church, what are some of the implications to that that are true of a local community, local congregation, but also true of the family as a domestic church? The first of those would be that that first and foremost, the family is a community. And again, think about that in terms of families. Somehow we need to do some work on, and these are things we'll talk about more in detail as the week goes on, some intentional things about being together, taking time in our schedule to just set aside some time to just be, you know, around the table together or whatever it is. Otherwise, you know, in the pace as it gets put on fast forward, we begin to say, and what was your name again? You know, the face looks familiar, the name looks good. So I think there's some ways in which we need to really be aware of how we are a community together. And we also are called to serve one another. And that service takes place both within our families and as a family serving others. Whether it's adopting a child in another part of the world and sending money regularly and finding out what's happening with that child. Our family's gotten connected up with a family. Actually, now one family's gone off the program and we're helping a second family in Guatemala. And we regularly correspond so we know what's happening with that family. Or do we write to a prisoner in jail? Or what are things as a family that we can do to help serve others and be aware of the larger community. On this note, on this point for just a moment, what would you say, we're talking about family as the bottom line, what would you say in the Gospels is this is the main passage where Jesus really points out a kind of bottom line to Christianity? A make or break place as far as whether, as I put it with my Gonzaga students, you either pass the final of life or don't. What would be the passage that comes to mind as far as the dividing line between those who've passed and those who won't? Give you a hint. Sheep and goats. Matthew 25, remember? As long as you did this for the least of my brothers, and we might add in sisters, you have done this for me. Okay? I was hungry, and you fed me. I was naked, you clothed me, and so on. Okay. In our tradition, we call this the corporal works of mercy, spiritual works of mercy. I don't know if that's part of your tradition. But anyway, how many times in the last couple of weeks, think for a minute, come up with a number for yourself, have I done those things? Have I fed the hungry, clothed the naked, comforted the afflicted, is one of listened, visited those in prison? Think about the list for a minute. How many kinds of things can I think of in the last couple of weeks that I've done to really help Jesus and the least of my brothers and sisters? Okay, you got a number for yourself? Okay. How many have done 20 or more things in the last couple weeks? How about 10 to 20?
Come on.
Less than 10. Wait a minute, I think most of you are wrong. And I did this purposely. How many of you, well, this week doesn't count exactly because we've been up here, and some of you may not have been home the last week before that, fixed meals, did the laundry, put Band-Aids on alleys, and so on and so forth? There's a lot of feeding the hungry and a lot of comforting the afflicted and a lot of things that are happening right at home. But somehow, you see that split I was talking about early in terms of church family? I've looked right past those things because they're right here in front of me and said, oh no, I have to be doing those things for Christ and others. But it didn't say it has to be outside the home. Not that it doesn't at times, because we do need to go beyond our known boundaries. But there's a real way in which the kinds of things, you know, I mean, how many of you went to work and brought home a paycheck so that somebody could buy the groceries, so that somebody could be, you know, there's a lot of that going on that we're not identifying as, I'm serving the least of my brothers and sisters and those I live with every day. And again, there's more that can be said about each of these, but I just want to kind of introduce these ideas right now. We are a community as well of prayer and ritual. And this is something that I'll be talking about, we'll be talking about on Wednesday. What are the ways in which, without obviously setting up pews in the living room, that we celebrate the special things that happen in our lives? Things like birthdays. You are really special. Thank goodness for you. And we'll talk more about that on Wednesday. What are the ways that the holy things that are happening right before our eyes don't slip away without some acknowledgement, some becoming more aware? But I think that there are ways that... yes, we might want to have a Bible study in the home, but I think there are all kinds of holy things that are happening that don't need a lot of religious terms in the way that might be problematic with some of our kids or might not be as comfortable for some of us. We find then that marriage, or in the case of the single parent, that's a foundational reality, a foundational community in the sense of the married couple. That's the foundation of the foundational church. We're getting pretty basic here. This is something that we want to talk about on Saturday. What are the ways in which this can be nurtured so that the domestic church itself can then be nurtured from there? And this is a countercultural community. Another way we could talk about this is in but not of the world. We'll talk about this tomorrow. There is a sense in which it seems to me, most any Christian family, if we follow the call of the gospel, we follow the beat of a slightly different drummer, and there are going to be some ways in which the way we live, and I think Holden's an excellent example, the way we live, the way we eat, the way we are with one another, and so on, has some different dimensions to it, and it means that we're going to look a little out of the ordinary. We're going to stick out a bit as a sore thumb. How are the ways in which that can take various forms in various families, but ways in which there's a sense in which our base values are a bit different than the society in which we live, which is striking in our society today, but has always been thus, it seems to me. And lastly, how are we good news to one another and to those around us? How are we a source of evangelization? See, all these things are also what the local church is called to, but if we talk about the family, as the basic unit of the local church, how is that true for the domestic church? How are the ways in which we are a source of good news for one another? Again, we'll be talking about this woven into the week. At this point, our plan and vary slightly according to how we get into these discussions is tomorrow to talk about the countercultural realities. On Wednesday, we're going to talk about family prayer and ritual. Thursday, we'll be talking about parenting, which is related here. And also, then on Saturday, we'll be talking more about marriage and single parent realities. But a number of these things will also come into the other discussions. I've run through these awfully quickly right now because we're almost out of time. Any comments or questions on what I said? Yes.
We're leaving today, so you're frustrated.
Yeah, I'm sorry about that.
But I guess one of my biggest concerns at this point, having a child going into sixth grade who's real socially, that's the age they seem to get to. And, you know, seeing some of these things beginning to happen, the pulling away and the need for tremendous independence and all this type of thing. Such a strong problem with kids wanting to be like everyone else. Mm-hmm. And when everyone else is not religious, or to use that, you know, what term you want to use, but church attending on the West Coast is notoriously low.
Yes. Yeah.
And there are some of our daughter's friends, in fact, her best friend goes to our church by luck. But it's a real problem, and I, you know, it's helpful to talk about the idea of bringing all these common things in that we do every day that we don't see as being. Mm-hmm. But if you've got anything to say about the problem with school and all of the stuff that goes on with school and all the social encounters children have when they get to the school age, it's such a jungle anyway.
Yeah, it is.
You know, and how that they can somehow maintain in that. I guess just a strong family unit in the sense of maybe trying to have some devotions or something.
Yeah. Yeah, our oldest is just going into seventh, and we've hit some of that stuff already. I think that in the preteen years especially, there's a sense that I have, maybe others would like to add to this, of needing to be anchored in the family as well as I'm pushing you away regularly. But the thing that's also been real important for us is, and it isn't synonymous exactly with our local church because the parish we're involved in is different, really, in a sense, from the community of families that we've become a part of. And there are some of those kids in other families whose parents have pretty much the same values. And I'm really convinced that we cannot, as much as we can talk about the community of the family itself, we need to talk about the community of families and the fact that we really can't live the Christian life in isolation. And that's where I think the peers, you know, like you say, the family that her best friend is in the same church and so on.
Trying to really develop those relationships.
Yeah. So that I'm not alone in this. And yes, it does look odd, and we talk about that a lot. I think the dialogues about values are becoming richer, all that frustrating, but richer all the time. Well, yeah, some people think that, and here are the implications of that set of values. But I think, you know, to know that no matter what, and even if you think we're really off the wall, we want to keep talking about these things. And it's going to get harder, but the important thing is we keep talking, you know. But yeah, I don't have any easy answers for that one. But I do think it's helpful for us to be real articulate when we can about what our choices are. You know, our kids have said to us a number of times in the last few years, well, you know, compared to everybody, now our kids are in a Catholic school, which supposedly would be a similar setting. Stuff they come home with, everybody else in class has this, and we don't have class. You know, and so we talk about, well, we made choices. We decided to be doing the jobs we are, which brings in less money, because we think these are important kinds of jobs to be doing because they help people in this way. Yes, we could be spending a lot more time outside the home and bringing in a lot more money, and then you'd have this and that.